The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Andrea has been giving a few Dharma talks already on the seven factors of awakening. And I'd like to continue that theme. So I'd like to talk today about how we can recognize the seven factors of awakening in our daily lives and how we can practice with them in our daily lives. But I will first briefly just name them so that you have them in your mind again. You don't have to remember it though. I will go over them. And the first of the seven awakening factors is mindfulness. Then follows investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. So they are called awakening factors because these factors lead us to awakening. So if we cultivate them in our meditations and also in our daily lives, then we are actively working towards more freedom and freedom from suffering. But since I only have one talk to explore this theme, I will touch on each relatively briefly with the emphasis on our daily lives. And you can kind of look what resonates for you out of those seven factors. Maybe you don't really want to work with some of them, but others might be very inspiring for you to start incorporating in your daily lives. So feel free to just let go of what you can't use and just pick and choose what you do, feel inspired by. So often these awakening factors are seen as something that we mostly develop in our meditation practice, through deeper practice of mindfulness and concentration. But we can bring our meditation practice to our daily lives. So how I see it is that we can become aware of those awakening factors too. And not only in our meditation practice, but just in our daily lives. So the first of the awakening factors, mindfulness. I think we all know that we can cultivate this in every situation. In every moment of our lives, we can bring mindfulness or awareness. And when we get out of bed in the morning, we can start. And during the day, when we do our daily chores, like when we do dishes or we talk to a friend or when we scroll through social media or answer emails even. So mindfulness can actually be seen as the basis for developing the other factors. And if we are not mindful, then it can be relatively hard to develop the other ones as well. So the cultivation of mindfulness in our daily lives is very beneficial. And these awakening factors are, in a way, like opposite to the five hindrances. And I think Andrea already talked about the five hindrances as well. And those are forces of the mind that keep us from experiencing wholesome states of mind, like the seven factors of awakening. And I will briefly name them too. I won't go into any detail, but the first hindrance is sensual desire. The second is aversion. The third is together sloth and torpor. The fourth one together, restlessness and remorse. And then the fifth one is doubt. So with the awakening factors, we can help to dispel a little bit of these hindrances. So for example, with mindfulness, one way we can work with hindrances is to patiently observe them. We can be aware of when the hindrances are present in our daily lives. And maybe we get annoyed by fellow drivers on the road, or maybe we start desiring ice cream, or we feel remorseful about harming someone. These are all excellent moments to bring in mindfulness, and to because mindfulness, awareness will help us to open to the suffering, open to the unpleasantness that these hindrances evoke. And it doesn't immediately help us to get rid of them. That's also not the goal, but we can start to learn from them. So the hindrances can be a teacher in a way. So one of the things that mindfulness does for us is to help develop the resilience to be with these difficulties in our lives. It can be any difficulty. And since we are simply present with what comes up, we can be with what is pleasant or unpleasant, because mindfulness doesn't really care too much if it's pleasant or unpleasant. And when we start to develop this skill, and that is a gradual process, we can experience increasingly more and more difficult things. I mean, it might become easier for us to be present for whatever arises. And of course, sometimes things are too overwhelming and we just need to step back and take a break and not be mindful, but maybe just do some grounding exercises. That can be very useful as well. Just want to name that. So an example from my own life, a gradual process like that is what, when I started meditating and started to become mindful, also more in my daily life, I started to see that I got angry. And first, I didn't even see the anger. So at some point, I started to see it and realized that I was triggered by something. And anger is part of the second hindrance of aversion. So through more and more meditation and being aware of the anger, I could just recognize, oh, anger has arisen, and be present with the anger without having to act on it. So I started to feel a choice point in the acting on it. So now I can usually, maybe not always, but often I can wait until the anger has subsided before I respond to a situation. And then I can respond from a more beneficial state of being, where I'm not harming the other person that might be involved. So being present for the hindrances like that, and being patient with them and learning to be resilient in the face of difficulties is what helps us grow and learn. And eventually, we can overcome the hindrances. Maybe not like right away, but in the way that I described, like we can see that the hindrance is present and it may subside at some point. And in that way, we can make room for the awakening factors to arise. So mindfulness can very directly help us to cultivate these awakening factors, simply by recognizing and observing what is in the way of the awakening factors, like the hindrances. Mindfulness can also help us recognize if the awakening factors are present or not. So it's not only its only function that it's observing the hindrances, but it's also observing if the awakening factors are present, and maybe rejoice in the fact that they are. Like, first of all, we can rejoice in the fact that mindfulness is present. That is already a awakening factor. Mindfulness can recognize itself. So isn't that wonderful that every time during the day when we notice that we are mindful, that we can realize, one of the awakening factors is present. And so then we get to the second factor of awakening, which is investigation. Investigation can help us become a bit more clear about what is happening in the mind, and maybe why, how, what happens from A to B. Why do we get angry, or what are our triggers, etc. So it's not so much about the content of our stories that we live through in during our daily lives. It's more about the process of the mind. Like, how does the mind work? What is the process of aversion arising? What is the process of equanimity arising? What's it like in the mind? We can get caught up in the stories, but sometimes we can maybe take a little step back and see what's actually happening. The conditionality. Why does aversion arise? Why does desire arise? And we can see that the experiences like that are like little events, changing, coming and going. It's not a stable state of mind, which is also quite an important way of reflecting on what's happening. And there's no right or wrong. It's just that mindfulness and this, together with this curiosity of investigation and this interest is what is fueling this investigation stage of the awakening factors. And it's especially when we feel a little bit settled that this curiosity about our experience and the wish to learn from it and to understand it can naturally arise. When we are overwhelmed, it might be a little harder, although we can still try to be interested in what is happening and why we're overwhelmed. But it might be a little harder, and we might need something else first, like some grounding exercises. For example, a body scan could be a grounding exercise. So, like I said, our curiosity and our interest can actually help us with that process of the mindfulness, can help us see through the patterns and conditionings that play out in our lives, can see through those patterns and conditionings of the hindrances. And so we might start to get curious about why we're always worked up when we're stuck in traffic. Or we might investigate a bit deeper that feeling of suffering that the stuckness in traffic brings. Or we might feel interested in a habit of reaching for food when we feel down. And we might get curious about how that feels, this downness. And we might start to understand that we're actually afraid or we feel lonely. And then we can start acknowledging the deeper layers under that behavior of reaching for food. So recognizing these types of patterns is part of starting to understand our own minds and hearts. And this leads to greater freedom, like the possibility of letting go of some of our suffering. And so when we are curious and interested in the experience of the mind, then we can also experience the arising of energy, which is the third awakening factor, energy. So through our investigation, we start to recognize how suffering comes about and how we can move away from suffering, how we can put in place the conditions for non-suffering or for happiness. And this process, these insights that come with that, give us energy to keep going. And that's kind of the energy that we need. And we start to see that this mindfulness and investigation is helping us, and we can feel more dedicated to keep at it, also when it's difficult. It's an expression of also of willingness to stay with experience that can also be energy, even with the difficult experiences. And sometimes this awakening factor is translated as effort. And sometimes we are really willing to put in the effort to practice. It's a dangerous word, effort, sometimes, because we can over-effort so much. And that's not what is meant here. This is more of a something that arises out of itself. It's not something we're trying to do or trying to make happen. So it can also express itself, this energy effort, through being more open to the experiences in our daily lives than that we were previously maybe open to. And maybe we can now be with this anger, or we can be with the remorse that we feel from harming someone, or even the doubt that we might feel that if we are good meditators, we're doing it all right and we're getting the instructions and that kind of thing. So energy or effort helps us with all of this, and it's a way of sort of persistence, so just keep going in the face of all that life throws at us, beautiful and difficult things. And the Buddha, he calls, in the sutta, he names a simile of a hen who sits on her eggs, and she just keeps at it. She just keeps sitting on these eggs, and eventually the chicks will hatch. So we can sit like that on our eggs, on all of our mental experiences to transform them. So, and then we get to joy, which is sometimes translated as rapture. And today I'll go with joy because to me that feels like a quality of mind that is more relatable to daily life than rapture, maybe. So the joy that is meant in these awakening factors is the joy that comes from practicing meditation. It is not a joy that we get from sense pleasures like eating ice cream or watching a movie. It's more the joy that comes from our openness and willingness to be present for life. And Bhikkhu Anālayo calls this the subtle joy of being in the present moment. And I was referring to that in the meditation. Bhikkhu Anālayo says, even the most boring chore can become an occasion for experiencing subtle joy as long as the chore is carried out with awareness well established in the present moment. End quote. So being mindful and open to the present moments can give rise to a subtle form of joy, especially when the mind is a little bit settled and there's not too many hindrances present, else those might kind of cloud the mind and we can't really feel that subtle joy. So for all of us, the hindrances are a little bit at bay at times, I can imagine. So then, in those moments, it can be very useful to recognize that that subtle joy that comes with just being in this present moment. And just recognize that the hindrances are at bay for a few moments, maybe. And sometimes we can experience this, especially with simpler tasks, like doing the dishes or folding laundry. If we do the dishes, we can maybe feel the water on our hands and the smell of the soap, and we can feel really present for this moment, just these dishes. And then we can feel this this subtle joy, just this present moment is just okay as it is. So this mindfulness and investigation leading to this energy to just keep on practicing and the determination that comes from that will also give rise to this joy of daily life practice. This is kind of a level unfolding, and we won't always be able to experience this, of course. We will have plenty of times that we don't feel like practicing, or it doesn't feel like it's joyful at all. But sometimes we might experience this, and that are the kind of the moments that can keep us going and keep help us with our practice. And then the effect of the joy, if we experience it, is that our bodies and mind can settle a little bit. And we're not struggling with life as much anymore. And that can give rise to maybe a little bit of tranquility, which is the next awakening factor. Tranquility is like a settling into the present moment, a deeper stillness and quietude of mind and heart. And it can even arise amidst the busyness of daily life. I think that in order to experience this tranquility in daily life, that it's important to, yeah, to really go for this practice, to really practice this mindfulness and investigation in daily life, and let the energy and the joy come from that. And sometimes it can help also to just have a daily, more structural practice of mindfulness to help your process in your daily life. And it is because tranquility is not something that we can make happen. It will naturally arise out of this gentle persistence of practicing these factors of awakening. And so that's also good news. We don't have to make it happen. We don't have to strive for it or try to get there. But we can just put in place the conditions and see what happens. And we can try to be not attached to anything happening. That is the most useful thing that I found, not being attached to it happening. So this tranquil state can help with concentration, the next factor, to arise. Sometimes concentration, the word for that is also translated as unification of mind or collectedness. But it's about the mind not being distracted in all sorts of directions, like going off in the past and the future, planning things, thinking about to-do lists, thinking about things we said wrong yesterday to our boss, or a conversation that we're going to have with our boss that we're worried about, all sorts of things like that. And when we are concentrated, then there is this unified calmness of mind. It is important, however, that our concentration is founded in right view or wise view, you could say, and that we don't use the concentration in unwholesome ways. Because I know Andrea sometimes uses the example of a burglar. A burglar can be very concentrated, walking through the house, trying to steal stuff. But that's not really the type of concentration that we're after. And we're looking for something more wholesome, based in non-harming. So, interestingly enough, I think that we can actually cultivate this concentration a little bit in our daily lives. And one way to do this is by training ourselves to pay attention to only one thing at a time. And I'm guilty of not doing that as well. Sometimes I just, fold laundry and talk to a friend on the phone, or I listen to a Dharma talk when I'm cooking, or doing all sorts of things at the same time. But when we start to want to develop concentration, then it's handy to do things only one thing at a time. Especially those simple things like cooking or laundry or doing dishes or going for a walk. Those are very good places to practice this concentration, because we can really stay with that task that we're doing. Really zoom in into what it feels like in the body, and what it feels like to fold your underwear, or whatever it is that you're doing laundry up. And so these are really good grounds of practicing just being with this one thing. Because sometimes when we try to do that when we're behind the computer, it might be a little difficult. It is possible, for sure. But it's, in my experience, it's way more difficult to do this with computer work. But once you get maybe a basis of doing the simpler tasks in our lives, you can also try this behind the computer. And maybe set a little alarm or something that you get a notice. Like, oh yeah, I was supposed to just do only this simple task. Maybe writing an email. Or looking up something on the internet. So mindfulness here, as you maybe recognize, is really the basis for concentration as well. Because if we're not mindful, we cannot really cultivate this in our daily lives, this concentration, this collectedness of not going off in all directions, but just paying attention to this thing right now. So concentration is a relatively already balanced state of mind. And from this concentrated state, equanimity can come. can come about, which is the last awakening factors, awakening factor. And it's, equanimity is like a superb balance of mind. It's one of the highest states of mind that we can attain in our lives, especially in our outside of awakening. So when we're equanimous, we are not pushed around by craving and aversion, but we can stay in the middle. We can be okay with whatever arises, and whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, or whether it's difficult or beautiful. So just as with tranquility, we can't really make equanimity happen. It's more of a state that naturally arises when we progress through the other awakening factors. So it's not impossible to experience equanimity in our daily lives, but it might be the hardest one. And we'll need to dedicate our lives to this practice, basically, and have a strong formal practice in our daily lives. And it's not for nothing that equanimity is always at the end of the Buddhist lists, because it's such a profound state of mind that it is often the more difficult one to attain. So don't feel bad if you don't get equanimous in your daily life. It would be pretty cool if you did. Like just as a quick note, the awakening factor of equanimity is a little different than the awakening, than the Brahma-Vihara equanimity. But for our daily lives, it might not matter too much, this distinction. And if we look at the Brahma-Viharas, those are trainable in a way. There's this, the Brahma-Vihara meditation for equanimity. And one of those sentences that is being used in the equanimity meditation is, I wish you happiness and I cannot make your choices for you. So if we're in relation with others or we're practicing in our daily lives and, you know, we're all encountering lots of other people, then we can maybe use this sentence like, I wish you happiness and I cannot make your choices for you. And this kind of lifts the burden for us to try to change this other person or try to make something happen with this other person, or that, you know, we want other people to be happy, but we cannot really make any choices that lead to their happiness. They have to do that themselves. So, those are the seven factors of awakening in our daily lives. And using these seven factors, mindfulness, investigation, energy, now I'm blanking. Joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. Those seven factors are like a framing of practice. So, yeah, the Buddha has actually offered so many different frameworks for practice, so many lists and other references, and this is just like one of them. So we always have a choice, like what resonates for us to practice with for a while, and we can always change it again. So what is it that we are drawn to at this moment to practice with? It could be just simple breath meditation, and it could be like paying attention to the hindrances. It could be working with these seven factors of awakening, or even just working with one of them. We can like kind of look for ourselves, like what's most helpful for me at this time. So this is just a new framework, or another framework that you can use, that you don't have to use, but that's just an option. So if you don't know where to start, then I would say it's always a good way to start with mindfulness, like I said, because that's the basis for all of them. If, even if you choose to pay attention to the subtle joy that you can experience, it's still useful to also include mindfulness in your practice. That's always the basis. So, and then that way, the other factors of awakening will naturally build as well if we are mindful. I'd like to end with a quote from the Buddha, and this is from the Dhammapada. He says, "Those whose minds have reached full excellence in the factors of awakening, who have renounced grasping, rejoice in not clinging to things, rid of cankers, glowing with wisdom, they have attained awakening in this very life." End quote. So when developed and cultivated, these awakening factors have the potential for awakening, for freedom from suffering. Thank you all for your kind attention. Now there's some time for questions or sharing. You want to share something? I have a question. Yeah. Are you unmuted?
Yes, two things. First, I wanted to thank you for the reminder toward the middle of the meditation to come back. I always find that very helpful. Sometimes I don't need it, but sometimes I do. And so I appreciate that. I also just wanted to say how much I appreciated your review this morning of the seven factors of awakening. I am familiar with them, but for some reason your thoughts and your reflections on them this morning really helped bring them into focus for me. And I very much appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm glad it was helpful for you. Great.
I have a question about equanimity. I've thought of equanimity often as if a situation, say, arises, a mind state or a situation that's, say, unpleasant, and to be okay with that, to know that it's unpleasant, but to be okay with it. I think I've thought of that as being some equanimity. And yet the way that you described equanimity as being a much more, I mean, I know all states can be more elevated and less elevated, but you kind of described it as being really a almost like an end state, you know, like the state that comes after all of the factors or whatever. And I guess I'm just asking you, is that state that I'm describing of kind of being okay, feeling kind of balanced in this place of like, this is happening, it's not of my choosing, but I'm okay with it. Is that not equanimity? Is that something else?
I would say it could definitely be a form of equanimity. It's not the super deep equanimity that the awakening factors point to. But it would certainly be useful to just, if it's useful to you, to label it as, oh yeah, it's pretty equanimous. I feel just okay with what is. Maybe we can say it's a daily life equanimity. So keep using that label if that's useful, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, Jen.
Well, what would the deep equanimity be?
what it would be. That's I think it's very hard to describe. It's a very deep sense of just like, it's kind of, if you kind of experience a very deep equanimity, then you're kind of floating on a cloud almost, and everything is just okay, but then in such a way that it's such a peaceful heart state that like there's no ripples anymore of little bits of aversion or greed coming in. Even like there's even no attachment to the equanimity itself, because the equanimity is just like, whatever happens is fine. Whatever happens is going to be okay. So, and often when we experience more of the daily life equanimity, then we can still feel those ripples. We can still feel a little bit of the aversion and desire coming in, and we can still feel I want this okayness to stay, or things like that. So that's a little bit of a difference in the depth of the state of mind. Oh, you're muted.
How would you contrast tranquility and equanimity?
Tranquility is just a relatively balanced state of mind where there's also an okayness. It can also, all these states also have a bodily aspect to it. The body feels very tranquil. It's less deep than equanimity. It has a different flavor in the sense of just the calmness and the bodily and the mental calmness. It's more of a flavor of that, and not so much of the like the deep peace of the equanimity.
So tranquility is kind of more like that feeling of being on vacation, lying out in the sun.
Yeah. Well, the equanimity can be everywhere. You can be like
in the water. Exactly. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Fred.
I don't know if this is helpful, but many years ago, I was doing some therapy, and the therapist used hypnosis. And as part of that process, I experienced the best words that I can use, and I would call it equanimity, is the peace that passes all understanding. I was just there, and it was so deep. And so that was one of my experiences with what I call equanimity.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Peace that goes beyond everything, something like that. You said that's beyond all understanding. Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, Olivia.
Well, first off, I just want to say thank you so much for that talk. I was a part of your talk a couple weeks ago when you were filling in for this Tuesday, and that one is still stuck with me too, so thank you. And I just have a question around, like, I feel like sometimes I get really caught up in, like, the experience of, like, I'm experiencing an emotion, and then I try to find mindfulness to, like, separate myself, but I still get so like in it, and then the frustration arises and the five hindrances come in more. So I guess this is kind of a vague question, but is the main way to kind of separate those those emotions and experiences from me is mindfulness, or are there like other ways to go about that and find that space?
Well, there are definitely other ways to go about it too. But first of all, I would say that acknowledging that there's no space is maybe the first step. And just kind of trying to see if you can be okay with it, that there's not this space. If that's and then maybe the frustration arises, like, oh, there's no space, I'm just kind of stuck in it. And if then the frustration arises, can you see the frustration with okayness? Can the frustration be there? So you can go a little layer, you know, it's kind of a layered experience, so you can go to the outer layers, so to speak. And the frustration could be the outer layer. You can even get another layer of like, oh, I don't want to be frustrated, which would then be the outer layer. And then maybe if you do that, maybe some separation will occur between the outer layer and yourself or your mindfulness. But if it's something that is somewhat overwhelming or it's really stuck or something that you could also try to just focus on something else. So, for example, go to the breath or go to the touch points of your body with the floor or with the chair or wherever you're situated, just to get the edge off. Also, when you're really frustrated about it, that could help as well, because else you just keep getting stuck in this frustration. And that might be not so helpful. The longer you get stuck in that frustration, the less helpful it's going to be. So it's a little bit dependent of the level of stuckness. It's really like a thing to try out, like what works for me. So it's not like a one-size-fits-all kind of solution. But to really try and see what works. And sometimes this works, sometimes that works. I don't know if that's helpful.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you. Yeah, I like what you said about like having the awareness that I have no space and then seeing if I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks. We get time for one more question or comment or sharing. And if there are no comments or questions anymore, then we could maybe just end with being aware of this moment, being aware of seeing the screen for some of us, being aware of the body sitting here, being aware of all of us together, meditating, having meditated together and shared the Dharma. Thanks to all of us showing up here, good practice together.